You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas.
One boy was forced to stand on a bed in a rectory, stripped naked, and pose as Christ on the cross for the priests. They took photos of their victim, adding them to a collection of child pornography which they produced and shared on church grounds. Predators in every diocese weaponized the Catholic faith and used it as a tool of their abuse. Father William Presley gave a boy sedatives to relax him before his abuse, then told him it was okay because he was a priest. Father Arthur Long told his young victim, as he pressured her to have sex, God wants us to express our love for each other in this way. Father Ed Graff told a seventh grader he abused that what they were doing was okay because the priest was an instrument of God. Monsignor Thomas Benestad made a nine-year-old give him oral sex, then rinsed the boy's mouth out with holy water to purify him. These children, surrounded by adults enabling their abuse, were taught that this abuse was not only normal, but that it was holy.
That's Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro with some excerpts from a grand jury report that was released earlier this week and found at least 1,000 victims and at least 300 priests, credible charges against them that had been dating back several decades and apparently had not made much of a wave in the hierarchy of the Pittsburgh diocese and those surrounding it, at least in terms of any action being done. The crisis of sexual abuse in the Roman Catholic Church has reached a new low, and many are speculating that it is not yet at the bottom yet, that there is more yet to come. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. On this Thursday afternoon, I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Rod Dreher is going to join us to talk about the sexual abuse crisis in the Roman Catholic Church. For the first few minutes of the program, Terry Mattingly joins us after that. We'll talk about media coverage of new charges that have been filed against Baker Jack Phillips by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. It's being reported that Jack Phillips is suing the state of Colorado, but what's often left out in the headlines, at least so far, is the previous action by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. I didn't read anything about those charges that were brought. They're rather old, actually. Well, Jack Phillips is fighting back legally. We'll see what Terry Mattingly thinks about the media coverage of that story. Then in Hour 2 of Issues Etc., it's part 3 of our series on the prophets and the divine tribunal. Today, we'll be talking about the prophet Micah. Joining us to talk about the sexual abuse crisis in the Roman Catholic Church, Rod Dreher. He's a regular guest, senior editor at the American Conservative, author of several books, including The Benedict Option and a recent column titled Bishops Without Chests. Rod, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's good to be here, Todd. Thanks for having me.
I'd like your response to a quote from Washington Archbishop Cardinal Wuerl, who was at one time the bishop of the Diocese of Pittsburgh, kind of the epicenter of the latest revelations. He said recently, "The sexual abuse of children by some members of the Catholic Church has been a terrible tragedy. While I served as bishop of the Diocese of Pittsburgh," and by the way, he did serve during the time frame in the latest report, "and as our understanding of child sexual abuse increased, the diocese worked to strengthen our response and repeatedly amended the diocese's safeguards and policies." What do you make of his statement?
I think it's buck passing. I think he's trying to minimize the crisis, and certainly he's trying to minimize his own responsibility here. You hear this a lot from Catholic bishops, and I've been covering this story for 16 years. Catholic bishops love to fall back on the idea that, well, the psychologists were telling us back then that this could be cured. They're right to a point. Psychologists did say this in the past, but honestly, what kind of man are you when you look at child sexual abuse by a priest and suddenly defer to what psychologists say? I think that we have seen here, Todd, in this entire scandal over and over again, bishops without chest, as I said the other day. That's, you know, of course, C.S. Lewis made his famous remark about men without chest, that we have a way of a culture that breeds men who spit at virtue, who don't act in a virtuous way. I think there's something about the Catholic bishop-making system that creates men and elevates these men to positions of leadership in the Roman Catholic Church, men who don't have that ordinary manly courage. And boy, do we see that in spades.
What kind of responses are you hearing from both from your circle of associates and friends, you being a former Roman Catholic yourself as well, what kind of responses are you hearing from kind of the rank and file of American Catholicism since the release of this enormous report out of Pittsburgh on child sexual abuse?
It's been fascinating, Todd, to be honest. I left the Catholic Church in 2006 because I, frankly, writing about the scandal for 4 or 5 years caused me to lose my ability to believe in Jesus as a Roman Catholic. I left to save my Christian faith. And a lot of lay Catholics thought that I was being cowardly by doing this. Well, they're not saying that now. I'm getting emails from some people saying, I thought that you had abandoned ship back then, but now that I see the depths of the depravity, I understand why you did what you did. Some Catholics are telling me that they are at the end of their rope. They don't know if they can hold on to the church or if they could even hold on to Christ. I'm not getting many people at all faulting me for writing so critically about the church. In fact, I'm getting emails from Catholic priests saying, please keep doing this. We have got to change the culture of the church. They're sick and tired of it, but they feel powerless themselves to do anything.
Why do the laity, by and large, seem to feel the impact of this while the clergy, and I think you're right, the higher you go into the hierarchy of the clergy, seem numb to this?
That is such a mystery, Todd. You know, Richard Sight died last week. He was a former Roman Catholic priest who spent his entire life studying sexual behavior among the Roman Catholic clergy. And he knows more than just about anybody else living or dead until he passed away about this problem. And even so, on his deathbed, according to a friend of his who was there, he said to his friend, will we ever understand why the bishops allowed this? So it was a mystery that eluded him. I think what happens, and you can see this in the grand jury report, what happens is these bishops, in order to preserve their peace of mind and preserve the image of the church, they have to numb themselves to the horror of what they're dealing with. And it's just incredible when you look at some of these things. There was one case I wrote about on my blog today in which the bishop of Scranton, Pennsylvania, had to deal with a case of a priest who raped a 16-year-old girl, got her pregnant, and then got an abortion for her. The bishop, in writing to this priest and then writing to Rome to get this priest reinstated, he describes what happened in very clinical terms. And not only clinical terms, but when he gets emotional about it, it's all talking about what's good for this priest. I mean, I think what happens is this idea of clericalism, the idea that the church is nothing more than the clergy, that infects these Catholic bishops and Catholic priests at a very deep level. And frankly, it infects the laity, too, to a great extent.
You mentioned in your recent piece that Cardinal Donald Worrell actually had a website prepared and ready to go that some were able to look at. I think it's been subsequently taken down after the grand jury probe was released. And you described the language there as corporate therapeutic. What do you mean by that?
Well, it was amazing. That thing didn't last a day. He must have heard an earful, Cardinal Worrell, from some of the big donors to the archdiocese. If you could read Cardinal Worrell's site, it sounded like something that came out of corporate PR. He was very antiseptic in his words, but he was also trying to use language that was therapeutic in the sense of, oh, we feel so bad about this, and we promise to try to make it better. It was language, Todd, that was completely, utterly inappropriate and inadequate to the gravity of the moral horror that was revealed in Pennsylvania. And I think that Worrell probably saw this as just another problem to be managed instead of a grave sin to be repented of.
How much of that do you think is entirely meant for public relation consumption?
Well, it's hard to know what goes on in any bishop's mind, but I think, honestly, they see themselves as good men. And as good men, they can't do bad things. That's how they think about it. So they think that as long as they can stay on top of this story and manufacture an image, an outward image of repentance, everything's going to be fine. And to be honest, it's worked for a lot of people for a long time. And I think, finally, though, the American Catholic public has had enough of it. It seems like that the ground really is shifting on these bishops. There's nothing that we learned out of the grand jury report that wasn't known before in terms of happening other places. But I think that a lot of Catholics had convinced themselves that the problem, the scandal was behind us, that we turned a corner on this. In fact, it's just not true. There's still a lot more to be uncovered.
Rod Dreher is our guest. We're talking about the sexual abuse crisis in the Roman Catholic Church. When we come back, account after account, they boggle the mind. They seem incredible. How do you absorb it, much less write about it?
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.
This is Dr. Daniel Gard, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia University Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and we are committed to our Lutheran confession and heritage. Please encourage the student in your life to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Rod Dreher is our guest, senior editor at The American Conservative, author of the book The Benedict Option, and a recent column titled Bishops Without Chests. We're talking about the sexual abuse crisis in the Roman Catholic Church. Rod, the report that's come out from the Pennsylvania Attorney General on behalf of the grand jury is a horror story from beginning to end, account after account after account, that boggle the mind. They stretch credulity in terms that these things could even happen, much less among the clergy who had the trust of the people. How do you absorb it, much less write coherently about it?
Yeah, I tell you, as I said, you know, 10, 12 years ago, it caused me to lose my Catholic faith. And even now, as a journalist and as a Christian, an Eastern Orthodox Christian, you know, my heart breaks for the good Catholic people, priests and laity, that I know and I look up to as good examples. They have to somehow make sense of this and figure out how to go on with their faith. But for me, just as an ordinary Christian, I see this as a confirmation that deep down we do struggle against principalities and powers, because this is satanic. There's no other way to describe it. I believe that Satan is alive and well and working overtime to undermine people's ability to trust God, specifically by working through the clergy and through the structures of the church, because that is people's main contact with God. I think, too, as an Orthodox Christian, and I would say this to all non-Catholic Christians, we have to be careful not to allow ourselves to believe that this is strictly a Catholic problem, because this kind of thing, if we give sin and structural sin a foothold within our churches, we could find ourselves in the same situation. I will say one more thing, Todd, that I think is hugely important. Later this month in Ireland, Pope Francis is convening the Catholic Church's World Meeting of Families. It's a big deal to talk about the sanctity of human life and the importance of the natural family. Among those speaking at this big global conference, Cardinal Wuerl, Cardinal Kevin Farrell, who was a flatmate of Cardinal Ted McCarrick, who was just revealed to have been a major sex abuser himself. Also Cardinal Joseph Tobin, who kept Cardinal McCarrick's secret. And Cardinal Oscar Maradiaga of Honduras, whose own seminary back in Honduras is completely consumed right now with the gay sex scandal. All these men are going there, cardinals of the Roman Catholic Church, preaching to large crowds about the importance of family. It's a joke. They have made the gospel about something that's a laughingstock in the public square. That's the thing that I hope the Catholic Church will understand, that, you know, they can't preach with any kind of authority as long as their cardinals and their clergy are such bad jokes.
The McCarrick angle highlights something, and again, I think I agree with you, Rod, it has broad applicability outside the Roman Catholic circle. And that is, for many decades, it was the policy of seminaries in the Roman Catholic Church to either do don't ask, don't tell with respect to the sexual proclivities of their students, men who would be priests, or to knowingly accept men who were homosexual or had these kind of tendencies. Now, it's my understanding, and I may be wrong, that that policy has changed, but the damage has been done. Talk about that.
Sure. Yeah, Pope Benedict XVI in the year 2005 issued a directive saying flat out, we are not to accept homosexual men into seminaries. But my understanding is that a lot of seminaries, local bishops have disregarded that. What we see in the broad sexual abuse scandal going back decades is what Richard Seip called a genealogy of sexual abuse. In other words, these were almost always gay men, gay seminary rectors, gay bishops bringing in gay men to seminary and dismissing heterosexual men, anybody who would buck the system, and allowing this culture of sexual corruption to arise within the clergy under the veil of celibacy. Now, it's not the case that just being gay means you're going to be a molester of minors or children. That's not true at all. But what does happen is that portion of gay priests who do molest boys, they are able to get away with it because so many other priests are sexually compromised that they can all blackmail each other. This is the sort of thing that Cardinal McCarrick's example really brings out about how this system works. I think that if the media ever rouses itself to go deeply into the Cardinal McCarrick story to figure out how it was that he was able to rise and keep rising to a position of great power in the American Catholic Church, even though a lot of people knew that he was an abuser, what they'll find is network after network of sexually active gay men who protected each other and promoted each other. This is a story that the media aren't eager to tell, though, so I don't know if it ever will be fully explored.
Go into a little more detail on that last observation, Rod, because I've noticed it in the coverage. It is often, you can read an entire piece about the sexual abuse of, and in this case, male priests abusing male boys. It's not always boys, or young men, but it most often is, with a single mention of homosexuality.
Right. It violates the narrative that the mainstream media has chosen, which is the only way you can ever write about homosexuality is with gays as victims of oppressors. And it's just not true. There's no way to fully understand this story of crisis in the Catholic Church without talking about the role of homosexual networks within the clergy. I'll tell you something, though. This is where I knew, Todd, that this was never going to be talked about in the media. Back in 2002, I was writing for National Review magazine in New York when the scandal broke big out of Boston. National Review sent me down to Dallas to cover the big Catholic bishops meeting, the first time they had met as a group since the scandal ripped a hole in the church. I went down there and was approached by a freelance reporter who was covering this for the Fox News channel, covering the scandal. She asked me if I would meet with her to bring her up to speed on what was happening in the Catholic Church, because she just hadn't been covering it to that point. I sat down with her in her hotel room. I gave her a list of who the big players were, what side they took, and so on. Then I got to the part about the homosexuality in the priesthood and why that was a big deal. She stopped me and said, "We can't talk about that. Orders from the top of the network don't go there." I remember being shocked by that, and I said, "You can't understand this story if you don't look at that aspect of it." She said, "I'm sorry, we're told from the top, ignore it." Now, if even Fox News Channel won't look at it, what hope does anybody have that the New York Times or the major networks will look at it?
And tragically, it occurs to me as I hear you say that, Rod, that that is further cover for the networks that exist in the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic clergy.
That's right. You know, Cardinal Francis Spellman, who was the Archbishop of New York in the 50s and the 60s, he was known outwardly as an arch conservative, strongly anti-communist. He also had a very active gay life in New York City, very active sex life. This is commonly known. He was once asked, "How do you think you're going to get away with it? Because what would happen if the New York Times or somebody else in the media found out what you were doing?" Cardinal Spellman laughed at them and said, "Who would ever believe that?" And this was back in the 60s, Todd. So he was right about that. Nobody would believe that the fiercely anti-communist Cardinal Archbishop of New York was a gay man, a sexually active gay man. But it was true. Today, we've come a long way in being able to talk about homosexuality. But it's still the case that these gay men who wear the cardinal's robes and wear the bishop's hats, they can get away with it because the media are going to protect them.
When we talk about that hierarchy and we mention the office of cardinal, there's only one higher than that, and that is Pope Francis. He has expressed his own concerns about homosexuality in Roman Catholic seminaries as late as May, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. What is Pope Francis to do?
Well, the feeling was, or the rumor was, after Pope Benedict resigned a few years ago, was that he resigned after a dossier was put on his desk in the Vatican exposing the gay networks within the Roman Curia, the Vatican's administrative offices. And he realized that he was cornered. He couldn't do anything about it, so he resigned. I tend to think that's true. It's never been fully confirmed, but I think that's true. And the problem didn't go away. Francis knows this is a problem. He even talked about there being a gay lobby. That's the term he used within the Catholic Church. I think that Francis has to realize that this is an existential threat for the church, at least in the West, where people are falling away left and right from Catholic Christianity. Problem is, if he confronts it head on and dismisses these corrupt bishops, who's going to be left? There are credible estimates that 50% or more of the Catholic clergy in the U.S. are gay. Doesn't mean they're all unchaste, but they're gay. Are the people, the Catholic people, ready to lose 50% of their priests? I don't know. It's a kind of crisis that has got to keep the Pope up at night.
Do you have any sense whatsoever that the grand jury report out of the Pittsburgh diocese is only the first of many, if not larger, revelations about the scope of priestly abuse?
Oh, certainly. And look, if you have people, if this has happened in Pennsylvania over the past 70 years, you know it's happened everywhere else. The question is whether or not other states will have the courage to convene investigative grand juries as Pennsylvania has done. I think here in Louisiana, my home state, I think there's almost zero chance that would happen because there's so many Catholics here. But I think there will be some states that do this, maybe states that are more secular. And I hate to say that because, you know, I'm a Christian and I don't want to see the church attacked by the state. But in this case, if that's the only way to get justice for these victims and to reveal the dark secrets that the Catholic Church has been hiding for so many years, then I say bring on the state. I tell you, though, this has to be something interesting for you Lutherans, Todd, because you know, you can't help thinking about what Luther confronted in Rome that started the Reformation. A lot of times that this is the only thing that can get the corruption rooted out.
Finally, you have been doing a series of interviews with a victim in this case. With about a minute here, you've been covering this for a long time, but sitting down and talking with victims is a whole different caliber of experience. What have you learned from talking to James?
Well, in talking to James and talking to a man in Nebraska named Stan Schulte, who was molested by a priest who was also his uncle, it really makes it real for me. You bury yourself, Todd, in these documents, as horrible as they are, you do get numb to it. And then you get a guy like Stan Schulte on the phone and listen to him sob, 37-year-old man sobbing on the phone about what happened to him and saying as he sobs, but I love the church, but I love the priesthood, I love my family, I don't want to hurt them, and then crying about what happened to him. It just makes it very real, and it makes you go look at your own children and realize that if these bishops, if this had happened to my kids, if a priest had molested my kids, these bishops would have crushed me and my family the same way they crushed these victims. It gives me strength to keep writing about this for the sake of justice for these victims, but also, if it doesn't sound too pretentious to say it, for the cause of Christ.
Rod Dreher is senior editor at the American Conservative. He's author of several books, including The Benedict Option and a recent column titled Bishops Without Chests. You can read that, and you can find The Benedict Option under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Rod, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you, Todd.
On the other side of the break, Terry Mattingly joins us. We're going to talk about media coverage of new charges being filed against Baker Jack Phillips by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Stay tuned.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During August, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Lutheran Education Association. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Some Bible passages make us more uncomfortable than others. Take, for example, any passage about money. But just because a topic makes us uncomfortable doesn't mean we shouldn't face it head on. That's exactly what the August issue of the Lutheran Witness has done, with articles on poverty, generosity, money management, and more. You won't want to miss it. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri, and Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.